Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, coming up on 20 into hour two, and looking forward to being joined by Dale Day, and get excited about getting you going about Remington tomorrow. They're back with the thoroughbred action. And nice opening day card. And see how things are going to unfold. The season. I'm going to have to, actually, as I go to pull up some of the Saturday stuff, I'm going to have to add Remington to my favorite PPs on DRF. That's part of the system. So there, in fact, there. I got to tell you, that dance card is filling up pretty quick at this point. When you're looking at it here, and you keep adding venues, and of course Saratoga and Del Mar part of the summer, and Ellis and Colonial. I got Canterbury on there. I got Indy. I got Monmouth and Woodbine, and now Remington. there's only so much you can do. There it goes, Remington up to the top, and so you'll be able to access the PPs in a hurry, and get into the season. So, oh, okay. So Casey said that Dale's just pulling into the racetrack. So we'll get him in a couple of minutes as soon as he's at his desk. While he does that, let me go back to the Queen's Plate draw on Sunday. Here it is from the rail, Hall of Dreams, Gary Barber and Adam Wachtel and Peter Deutsch. This is a Lemon Drop Kid. There you go, son of King Mambo. Right on cue after Sid and I talked yesterday about King Mambo and Dynaformer types. This a gelding coming out of the plate trial. Ran good in the plate trial, actually, off the maiden win. We'd have to take another step forward, Hall of Dreams. But an LDK out of a horse chestnut mare Joey G. Thoroughbred's bred this one. Chamateur, another of an Adina runner, or Adina bred runner in the plate. Chamateur, this one for Frank himself. And coming out of an allowance performance, second, seems like Chamateur is going to have to improve. Shaman Ghost out of Leroy D'Animo mare. Louis Contreras rides. Patrick Husbands rides Hall of Dreams. Ironstone coming out of the Marine. This is a Mr. Speaker colt for Tequesta Racing. And the Minkster, Danny Vella, won three straight going into the plate trial. And then got beat as the favorite, the English Channel colt. Duke of Love, Danny Moran riding. Justin Stein aboard Duke of Love for Josie Carroll. This is a Cupid colt. Also out of the plate trial. Second in the Marine, though. That's a My Racehorse runner. Rondour. Katerina Vasileva, the winner of the Marine. Flavian Pratt up to ride Rondour, or at least, you know, is in town and gets the call. Dancing in DeVille, Sean Bridgemahan for Gail Cox. For Samson, and who knows, this might be Samson's last runner in a Queen's Plate ever. Moira, Kevin Attard, the Adina bred X-Men Racing, Matticat stable in there too. And Rafael Hernandez back aboard Moira, and she'll be, I didn't see the morning line yet, but she's got to be, that probably is the choice. And Huntmaster, Openwood Farm, Angus Boutain, the Hunter's Bay. Allowance type. Serve for Sure, the plate trial winner, with Decky Carroll looking exciting for Declan. The Sligo Bay gelding. Hest Sport for Mark Cassie. And Causin' Mayhem, Chiefswood, Todd Pledger. Broke the maiden at Belmont, you might recall. I remember I brought this horse up with Todd. And sure enough, turns up in the Queen's Plate. So there it is. 11 of them line up on Sunday in one of the oldest continuously run stake races in the world, not just in North America, the Queen's Plate. Dale Day standing by, and I'm sure excited for the Thoroughbreds to start running again at Remington. Dale, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hope all's well with you.
Well, yeah, I made the mistake yesterday of saying saying to somebody at the track, "Boy, what a nice quiet meet. Things have been so copacetic and placid." That's over with. Dale, we can turn tomorrow and get excited about the Remington season. And boy, based on these first two cards, it looks like the backstretch is full of horse flesh, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, so far so good. I didn't check the count as to how many we have in the stable area yesterday, but Tuesday when I got back in through the Monday count, we were above 1,100, almost to 1,200. We can house 1,400 horses on the grounds at Remington Park, so we're almost at capacity. We expect a few more stables to continue shipping horses in. And they filled up the entry box for the first two nights, which is a great thing. 9.6 average field size for the first two nights, 18 races, 9 each night. And the Governor's Cup leads us off for our first stakes race of the season on Friday night, 175 grand at a mile and eighth for the older runners on the main track. So, again, first 2 days look pretty good. Long way to go, 67-date season. Just Friday, Saturday racing here in August. We kind of keep it low key for a little bit until we get past Labor Day. Then we ramp it up to go our normal schedule of Wednesday through Saturday night. So hope everybody's ready for it. 7 o'clock Central Time, 8 o'clock Eastern, and we'll be rolling, ready to go tomorrow night. Weather in Oklahoma, by the way, those of you that like to follow weather, it's been brutal this summer. We've had, I think, 25 days of 100 degrees and up since about July 1st, but we are catching a break. As I sit in my mobile studio in the parking lot here at Remington Park right now, we're at 73 degrees, and temperature tomorrow night at race time should be dipping into the high 80s and just plummeting after that. So we will take it. That will seem like a cold front around here after what we've been going through most of the summer. So we're ready to go and happy to have Thoroughbred action back at Remington Park.
let's look at the calendar and give everybody just a feel for, you know, some of the hallmark events. And of course, that includes things like Oklahoma Derby Day, fairly early, approaching mid-meet, Oklahoma Classics, which was the first time I ever came to Remington, and I've got a wonderful picture, Donnie Von Hemel sending out our fine Okie. K Fine Okie. Who was the classic? You won the classic.
D Fine Okie.
Thank you. I knew it was a letter.
I had to think for a minute. That was a few years back, but yeah.
Exactly. And I got to present the trophy for the Oklahoma Classic. And then of course Springboard Mile at the end of the meet.
Yeah, a lot of big race dates coming up. The Derby always we put it on the last Sunday and September. It's been there for about more than 10 years now. We found a spot for it, and we think it's perfectly placed for those runners that are looking for another stakes race of any divisional sort. We've got, I think, 8 stakes races on that day, trying to get ready to go to Breeders' Cup. If they're crossing the country, we always try to catch a couple dropping here in the center of the country before they move on to their destination in early November. So, Grade 3 Oklahoma Derby, Grade 3 Remington Park Oaks, the David Vance Sprint, among other stakes races on that day, September 25, our only Sunday of racing in the season. So hopefully everybody's ready for that when it comes around. Then Oklahoma Classics, our divisional night of stakes for the top Oklahoma Breds, $1 million night plus of racing for them on Friday, October 21. And then on the final night of the season this year, Saturday, December 17, is the Springboard Mile, which of course carries early Kentucky Derby qualifying points for top two-year-olds, so it's a very important race for us, and we're always looking forward to that as well.
Well, and the mile continues to raise its profile, and particularly in the absence of the Delta jackpot, with the jackpot and the princess disappearing after Katrina. The mile is really, the Springboard Mile's really become the Mid-American Racing's, last roundup for the good two-year-olds.
Yeah, and it's positioned about a month or at least 3 weeks after Churchill runs their final two-year-old stakes of the season, there on Thanksgiving weekend usually. So it's in a good spot, and it gives everyone, if they're looking for one more chance before the calendar year ends and they go from 2 to 3, and it's caught some nice horses in the past. We've seen horses using the race and eventually getting into the Kentucky Derby, which is the whole idea for where it sits and with the qualifying points. So we're very happy with how it's turned out, and it's been elevated in stature over the years and sits as a high listed race right now. We're fingers crossed someday hopefully it'll get at least a grade 3 and receive a little more relevance way as well. So and all of our stakes nights, all of our nights, Oklahoma Derby, of course, loaded up with stakes events throughout the entire card. The Oklahoma Classics is all stakes for the Oklahoma Breds. And then Springboard Night there at the end of the season, it's also loaded. I think there's 6 total stakes on that night. So we always try to have a all stakes pick 4 and give a little more to the players on those big stakes night.
Well, a couple of things that we'll get to the betting menu and get everybody acclimated as well, and we'll talk a little trainer and jock information and track trend information for those that only maybe play Remington on occasion or have never played. I mean, that's one of the reasons we have these kinds of visits. I am reminded of significant development, actually, Dale, that Pat Cummings just sent me the missive. The Category 1 rules governing disqualifications and the way in which the stewards approach adjudications.
Right. I was going to save that for later down the road, but it goes, Oklahoma Horse Racing Commission has adopted the Category 1, which, for those people who don't understand it, is basically the way races are judged and officiated pretty much everywhere in the world except North America, Europe, Asia, Australia, Hong Kong, so on and so forth. So that will be adopted by the Oklahoma Horse Racing Commission on September 12th, and the first race day it affects Remington Park is on Wednesday, September 14th. And we're going to try to explain it as best I can. It can be somewhat confusing, but basically, if there's an interference situation, contact between horses, the stewards then have to officiate it in this regard. Forget the contact situation. Was the horse that was interfered with still in competition with the horse that caused the interference, competitive in the race, and was still having a chance to advance and win the race? If the stewards deemed the horse that was interfered with had already given up or was being past the point, not keeping up with that horse that interfered with them, then there will be no switch in the order of finish. Now, there might be a fine or a penalty to the jockey, mm-hmm. but the horse is not DQ'd, if you will, from, say, a first, second, or third, or even a fourth placing to place behind the horse that was interfered with. So a bit different than what most people are used to in America, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes when it starts here. I know the stewards with the Oklahoma Horse Race Commission have been going to school, if you will, for that to try and get ready for it. They've had a lot of overseas Zoom sessions with stewards in Australia and other parts of the world. They go over videos together, trying to study and see the differences and so on and so forth. So a lot is going into that. And what was kind of funny, when that first came up and I read about it, I'm like, well, isn't that how we already do it? But it's not always the case that way. So some people are going to be thrilled with it. I'm sure some people won't like it, but things are changing, and Oklahoma is the first jurisdiction that I know of, at least in North America, to adopt the Category 1. That won't start, though, till mid-September.
Well, and reach out to Pat.
And,
no, you were perfect. That was well done.
Everybody on that.
No, it's been we've had it, Dale. We've discussed it as many times with Pat Cummings and Pat. You know, who obviously has been an advocate of it. Given his ties and experience, Hong Kong and international racing in general. In fact, I'm going to see if Pat has got a couple of minutes after we're done to maybe talk about how things would have been affected here at Saratoga. We've had a series of, I mean, in some cases they absolutely had to. We understood the DQs and they. You know, under the rules as they exist. I mean, certainly the one the other day with the clipped heels, it killed me personally. But you completely can understand a certain situation. But there's been some other non-calls that have been much more, or calls that didn't seem necessary under you know the same standards of the Category 1. So we're going to, we'll see if Pat has got some time. Yeah, he's got time. He's going to talk. He'll talk about it.
Another thing I'm interested in to see, I think it's going to, and this is just my opinion, not watching and calling races for a few years now, it's going to hopefully end some of the master thespian acting by jockeys. nothing against the jockeys, but there's a few out there, and they may or may not know who they are, and I'm not going to name names, but a horse drifts over in front of their mount, they're not still really competitive, or even the horse is clear, and suddenly the jock on the horse that's behind the one that's drifting about stands up like he just was shot with a taser or something, and you know, acts like he might already getting set to fall off his mount. And that should change, I hope, some of that, because some riders sell it. Let's face it, some riders sell that possible interference situation like they went to the, you know, school, not riding school either. So I think that'll end some of that. I would hope so, at least.
Let's talk about what we really enjoy, which is discerning the riders, the horses, the trainers, and the angles and so forth. I mean, obviously, we're going to get a steady diet of the, you know, the Southwest training community. Steve Asmussen and C.R. Trout, Scott Young, and Broberg, of course, and Austin Gustafson, Brett Calhoun. These are the leaders from last season. But then there's, you know, some of the horsemen who win at a good rate, don't have as necessarily as many runners to offer, Dale, but you know, guys like Carl Craddock, for instance, you know, wins with alacrity, and Touch on some of your favorite, your favorite horsemen and some of the maybe some of the under the radar names that people need to watch out for.
Yeah, Carrie Craddock, she does a very good job with her runner. She's got about 30 back there ready to go. And you mentioned C.R. Trout. I don't have my Friday stuff in front of me, but I think he has one or two in almost every race on Friday night. C.R., he's not going to win the most races any season at Remington Park, but he's going to win a high percentage of races that he starts, and he's going to have a huge percentage of first, second, third compared to what he starts. He doesn't have a lot of horses. He probably has about 20. And C.R. Trout, for those that don't know who he is a great friend of racing to Oklahoma and Remington Park, and just one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He breeds almost all of his horses, and then he goes ahead and trains them as well, and of course he owns all of them. And he has set up himself with a great broodmare band that he has been building for years and years, and he keeps them here in Oklahoma, and he ships them off every other year to Kentucky or so to visit other stallions. But he really has a tremendous organization, and he always starts Remington Park season ready to go, especially with his two-year-olds. Usually they're not started yet, and he has them ready to fire on the first out. So if you don't know who CR is, pay attention to that, especially on the opening weekend, even opening two weekends. If you see a new two-year-old or one that only has one start, maybe consider it, even though you might not see something on paper you like. You need to consider it, because CR points to the Remington meet for those babies every year, and he's ready to go. And he's had great success as well with the stakes runners. You mentioned all the other top trainers. Steve Asmussen, the Hall of Famer, joined for training title number 18 at Remington Park. He's the all-time leader here in trainers, so expected to have another big season as well. Austin Gustafson has come on strong in just the last few years since he picked up training, and he's done very well. Danny Pish is another who has been doing well at Remington Park in the last few years, well-known in Texas training circles. He has moved to Remington as well in the past, about 5 to 7 years, and has really made this a focal point of his campaign as well. And then others that don't get mentioned near enough, Oklahoma-based trainers, Joe Offholder, Kenny Nolan, they always have plenty of talented runners and always need to be considered as well. And I'm probably leaving many, many out, but I don't mean to do that. J.R. Caldwell is another who's had great success in the last 5 to 10 years in Texas and in Oklahoma you have to consider. So a good training group, talented jockeys. We have a few new riders in this year trying to challenge David Cabrera. Ramon Vasquez left the Collie this past year. He's out in California now, and he and Cabrera were basically locking horns head-to-head for the title for about the last 8-9 years, and Cabrera has won the last 4 straight years, so his rival in Ramon is gone, but there'll be others here trying to challenge him. Stuart Elliott always has solid season at Remington Park. Doesn't ride as many as Cabrera normally, but rides usually first call for Steve Asmussen here, so you know he's going to get plenty of quality mounts. And the wily veteran, he knows what he's doing. Luis Quinones. With more than 1,000 wins, and he rides about 3 to 5 on any given night, and he can find the most out of his mounts as well. So just a few names to throw out if you're not familiar with the Remington Park racing product to remember. And Jesse Overlander, I need to mention him. A younger trainer, he kind of took over the operation from his father, Randy Overlander, a couple of years ago, and he's having very solid success, just like Randy did, and does very well for the turf runners here. And speaking of turf, we're very proud of our turf course right now at Remington Park. The heat tried to do it in back early in the summer. When I left to go on vacation with the family in late June, I looked out the windows and thought, gosh, we're not going to be ready. This thing, we may not have turf racing. It was not a very colorful, it was not a very pretty brown, yellow, gold, if you want to call it that. But through proper watering overnight using our well system, and we did have some rain last week a little bit, it is lush green, and Chris Thomas, who maintains our turf course, has done a fabulous job with that. So at least to start, it's green, and we're ready to go with that.
Looking at this group, actually, both the training and the rider community, I'm just sort of looking for for any potential new faces, and It really does seem like the ones we're most familiar with.
Christian Torres, he's in to ride. He's not been here much in the past. There's a couple of others who have come in as well. Oh, Chance of Melanson, riding here for the first time ever.
Oh, wow.
Gerard Melanson's son.
Yeah, yeah.
Rode primarily in Louisiana the first 8 to 10 years of his career. He's branched out and rode a lot in Texas this year, and he's now moving his circuit up to Remington Park, and I believe wants to follow the circuit then to Oaklawn once our season ends. So, talented rider, I say young, he's younger than me, so that counts, in his early 30s, I believe, but he's making a good name for himself away from Louisiana now, and he'll be here for the first time as well.
Let's talk about the betting menu and those expectations, which include pick five, the one pick five that opens the cards. And, of course, we're talking about evening post. I mean, the post time kickoff, are they going to be consistent other than a couple specialty days?
Right. We go, it's exactly 7:07 p.m. Kind of follow the old Ted Turner method with the Atlanta Braves back in the 80s. Start your games or start your race 5 minutes or so after the top of the hour, after the bottom of the hour, and you can hit a window. So we started doing that years ago, and it's worked well for us. So 7:07 normal start time, aside from a few specialty days, Oklahoma Derby on the Sunday in December, or excuse me, September, that goes at 3, and then Springboard Day on the last day of the season is 5. And then we have our Mondays and Tuesdays around Thanksgiving holiday in November. They go at 2:30, but normally 7:07 start time. And the pick five begins in race one, so we catch a lot of people that like to play the East Coast time zone tracks, wrapping up their day. They will tend to go ahead and put something down on our pick five. They may not stick around to watch it wherever they are, or may tune in again after they have dinner or something like that, and that's perfectly fine. We welcome that, and that's why the pick five starts right there in the opener to catch the players who cleaned up during the day to try to roll something up again at night, and we're happy to have that there. Pick four, premier pick four begins in race number two. Primetime pick four is always the last four races on the card, and when we expand the program and have up to 11 races and above, we'll throw a middle pick four in there as well. Rolling
Excellent.
Pick threes begin in race three. Daily double still traditionally first race of the night and next to last race of the night.
Dale Day with us, of course, and you can follow Dale on Twitter, the Dale Day, and the voice of Remington, and himself, a now accomplished contest player. He started literally from scratch and was a final table participant at the NHC this past year. And so when Dale is on air doing any handicapping, he's not doing it as a hobby.
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Yeah, I was fortunate last year to qualify for the NHC, and my first time out, extremely fortunate to reach the final table. So I was thrilled, to say the least. Last time we talked, I think my heart rate was about 120 a minute, and I was going 1,000 words a minute, too. I was just extremely adrenalized for that final table. It was a great, great feeling, great event, and to be able to cash was astounding. Now, of course, the next question is, have I qualified for next year? The answer is no. Not yet.
Ooh.
It's hard. It's hard to get there. But hopefully the fortunes will turn, and in the last few months leading up to that, I'll be able to make it again. It was a lot of fun. First time I've ever been to Vegas where I spent almost zero time in any casino as far as playing anything. All I did was handicap and pay attention to that. It paid off, so it worked out.
Well, are you participating? Are you qualified in Beat Bic for the final?
Yes, I did qualify 2 weeks ago. I believe I qualified with Bic on that weekend. So that turned out well. So I will be in that, yes. That's how
Excellent.
I got started. The Beat Bic about, 5 years ago, I think, was your first one, maybe? Anyway, saw that. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. And then the NTRA and HC, they offered a tour package, join for the rest of the year for, I don't know, a dollar or something like that, $5.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I went ahead and did that, and then, of course, kept on. And really wasn't playing a lot of tournaments, just basically playing the free ones, and hit and managed to make it. So now, of course, a giant bass that's been out there in the water forever. I'm hooked all the way through, and they've reeled me in, and I continue to try and qualify.
I love it. Well, we're going to do some on-air handicapping and remind everybody, or I don't know if there's been any changes to the pundit lineup and the on-air talent.
No, we're standing pat. Kelly O'Hara will host our paddock situation. Richard Linehan's been with us for a few years now. He'll add his commentary mostly on pick fours. He focuses on those and does very well in that area normally. So, and anybody that likes more selections to try to add to theirs or just other opinions, everybody seems to want as many opinions as possible, just go to ramagepark.com, click on live racing, then race day picks, and you'll get, we put them all out there. They're free. They don't cost anything. And whether you disagree or agree, it's there. It's just something to consider. So we hope everybody enjoys it, and we're ready to go. First two nights coming up tomorrow and Saturday.
Outstanding. And the Governor's Cup, of course, the feature, 11:23 Eastern time. For those of you on the East Coast that are a little bit on the night owl side, you know, you be sure to tune into Remington, and we're gonna feature. They're gonna ease into the meet, and they'll start to get, as Dale explained, they'll start to really get regular and their normal schedule in early fall. So happy to kick off the meet tomorrow and get some people to. If you've never been to Remington, too, it's just so pleasant. And in fact, you know, Dale, the one thing I didn't get a chance to do when we were on Route 66, Tina and I, we basically passed on I shot. I said to Tina, I said that, you know, Remington's right over there. You can just see sort of the roof of the building from at that point. You're on what highway was that? 44.
That should be 44 at that point, yeah.
Yeah.
I-44 from here up to Tulsa.
Exactly. And the best part of our Route 66 experience was, you know, most of Oklahoma you can still travel, the main road.
Most of it you can still travel the original, yeah. Especially towards western Oklahoma, you can actually still get on the original Route 66.
Oh, we were. I mean, we. I should. That's funny. I should send you a couple of pictures. We particularly enjoyed the Oklahoma portion of it, and then found some things. Specifically, found something unbelievable up in the northeastern corner where you cross Kansas for about 10 minutes. Just unbelievable. And we even, you'll appreciate this. We were driving and. We saw, and I could tell on the map, Dale, about the lake of the not the lake of not the not the Cherokee the lake of the what
Missouri, the lake of the Ozarks.
No, in Oklahoma, that
Oklahoma,
the one that was made that was made by a dam in the late 30s. I talked to Mogret about
Northeast Oklahoma.
Yes,
Grand Lake.
That's it. Lake of the Grand Cherokees, land of the Grand something. Yes, it was
okay.
Very cool. And I'd never noticed it on a map, never heard of it. And Tina and I kind of drove in to a couple of coves and a couple of marinas, and it looks like a vibrant, you know, summer vacation destination, and you know, weekend houses. Incredible. I was blown away.
Yeah, there's some great sites for sure. Oklahoma, it's one of those places where the eastern side of the state, you have your hills, and they're called mountains. They're really not mountains, but it's more foresty and hilly, and then as you travel west, you get into the plains, and farther west, you're more desert-like. So it kind of covers all the different ecosystems.
Well, I had not really been through. I had to really kind of go back to my days when I was based in Kansas City for Proctor, and I used to come down to Tulsa and make sales, you know, food service sales calls all throughout Tulsa, and I enjoyed it so much. I mean, I got to see a lot of back then. I got to really, and that I hadn't been, so that's late 80s. So literally 30 years, really, since I'd been, and the one time I came to the track. So going to try to make it there this year. Maybe Springboard Mile, closing weekend, might be a target, Dale, to come and visit.
Well, just make sure you don't bring cold weather, and we'll try to work that out.
That's my, you're going to lay that at my feet?
Right now, we welcome temperatures in the 30s, but
exactly.
We'll wait for that to December.
The Dale Day, everybody. Follow Dale and get excited tomorrow. They kick off at fabulous Remington Park. And as I've said, it is a wonderful facility, a gaming facility that is proud to offer thoroughbred racing and quarter horse racing, fully integrated into the atmosphere at Remington Park. Dale, talk in coming weeks. Good luck. Good luck to everybody. A safe, successful season.
Thank you very much, and everybody have a winning weekend out there.
Dale Day, folks. There we go. We're going to stay here and get one visit in, and as I told you, we were only going to report actual news and reportage. Matt Hegarty is going to join us in the Daily Racing Forum. Matt filing his early story, and of course, obviously, this will be a developing story throughout the day. Chad Brown arrest and arraignment on essentially, it's a choking charge. It seems, by description, a technical description, and involving a domestic dispute. So we'll let Matt report. And I don't have to tell you what kind of coverage, what kind of response that this story is already getting and will continue to get. And people speculating on circumstance, there's no reasonable explanation it doesn't there's still obviously
all right, thanks.
Okay, there we go. So Casey had to call Matt back. I'll let Matt Hegarty do the reporting. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Matt, the word, the rumoring started very early this morning that an incident of some kind had resulted in the arrest of Chad Brown. Tell us what we know as of right now and what's going to transpire here in the coming hours.
We do know that he was charged last night after being arrested with a misdemeanor charge of obstruction of breathing. We know that it was a related to a domestic dispute with a former romantic partner. He was arraigned earlier this morning. We don't know exactly what the results of that arraignment are. But I'm in the midst of trying to find out right now.
Essentially spent overnight in Saratoga City Jail?
Yeah, and the arraignment occurred probably around 10:15. God was headed down there, and it was already over at that point. So, like I said, I'm still waiting to find out what the results of that were.
Under normal procedural basis, what is a typical chain of events from this?
Well, the arraignment will be the official statement of the charge, and then typically you get the opportunity to post bond on a misdemeanor charge. It's almost certainly that he was able to post bond and be released. And after that point, then the investigation
would determine whether or not the charge would be pursued.
Well, certainly a situation, Matt, when you come for the Jockey Club Roundtable and for the Ben Liebman meeting, this is not a reporting assignment that you are looking for or expecting.
Yeah, these are obviously tough stories to report. You're familiar with the backstretch. So I'm sure that you've heard a lot of stories about what exactly this incident involved. But at this point, we're just trying to rely on the officials.
Figure out where it goes from there.
Obviously, you know, Chad is perennial leading trainer up here. He's currently leading the trainer standings. He has a horse entered in the Alabama on Saturday. He has four horses entered in the Lake Placid on Saturday. We don't know how this will affect the training operation at this point. It is a misdemeanor charge, but we're hoping to go to.
Losing you here a little bit, Matt, but as I suggested at the top of the show, this is the best way to respond to this is with the facts and with the straightforward reporting. The rumors and so forth aren't going to be valuable to anybody. Since we're together, Matt, in addition to this late breaking overnight news, you were at the Racing and Gaming Conference. There were some fireworks of sorts there too.
Yeah, and I don't think this was as I reported yesterday, there was some back and forth on the HISA issue. Lisa Lazarus was on a panel yesterday with several representatives of constituencies that aren't seeing eye to eye with HISA now. Some of them obviously involved in lawsuits against HISA. Out of HISA, remains controversial. Obviously, these lawsuits are a big distraction for them and for the supporters of the organization. I don't think it's unexpected when the first lawsuit started getting filed that this was going to be a journey, and there was going to be a lot of conflict that still needs to be resolved, and we definitely saw some of that on the panel yesterday.
Well, and for those that didn't see, I'll put the link up to Matt's story so you can read the specifics. The headline to look for is Racing and Gaming Conference focuses on HISA's rollout and hurdles it faces moving forward. And in fact, between the conversation I had Monday with Tom Rooney, which was in response to, for the most part, the roundtable, and then what came up as recently as yesterday and then this morning with Todd Mostoller having a horse disqualified from a placement and 5,000 in purse earnings because of a 10th crop strike. Terry Meeks was with us yesterday, Matt, as well, and you can tell that Terry doesn't hold out a lot of confidence that any of their concerns from the jock side of things is going to be assuaged or adjusted. So this is, we talk about it, and yet it doesn't seem like there's going to be, other than growing pains and the mechanics being implemented, to as much satisfaction as can be, authored. It just seems like this is going to just plow forward no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, the simple fact is that this is federal law. I don't think they, Heisa, has a choice but to at least attempt to fulfill the provisions of the legislation that had put it in charge in the racing industry as of last month. I don't see an easy resolution to this. You have seen that Heisa is putting together a horseman's advisory committee, but the that created them spells out explicitly what these rulemaking committees are supposed to be comprised of, and that was by design. Heisa was formulated to be insulated from licensees making the rules. This was the major points of the legislation. So you understand what Heisa is trying to do as far as reaching out and trying to have an olive branch to the horsemen's groups and the jockeys guild. But you still run up against the fact that in the federal law, they're limited as far as how much influence they can give to the licensees they're supposed to regulate.
Matt Hegarty, I appreciate it. Haven't seen you yet. Hope to see you. How long are you staying? Staying through the weekend?
Through the Traverse Stakes.
Oh, great. Very good.
Yeah, so I'll through next Sunday and hoping to have a day off at the track on Alabama Day, which is kind of a normal ritual for me. So
I love it. Well, I will see you then. Matt, I appreciate, I know there's only a limited amount of reporting that you can do until further, further facts come to light regarding the situation. Chad Brown's arrest overnight on a essentially, is it domestic battery-ish? I've never even heard this term before, the technical term.
Yeah, it's quite a specific charge. At least that there was some an element of battery to the charge for sure.
Obstruction of breathing. It doesn't take a physician to understand what this involves in terms of I'm at a complete loss to just absorb the ridiculous behavior that we so frequently have to in one form or another deal with. It's just as if. As if the industry doesn't have enough difficulties to stare down. Matt, I appreciate it, and we will see you out there.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
DRF Hegarty, everybody. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got Pat Cummings standing by. Pat is not standing by. He's sitting in the car. He's driving. So, and he said, I said, can I push you back for... can I come to you in a few minutes? And he said, yeah, we're captives in the car. So we'll get Pat Cummings to talk about the follow to what brought up with Dale Day. That was great. And I'd forgotten, actually, that agreement had been made, that Oklahoma was going to adopt Category 1. So Pat will explain it, and the timing is good because we've had a summer of... already, coming up on two-thirds of the way into the meet, we've had plenty of occasion where things were being decided by the stewards. So Pat, maybe will touch on a few that how they might have been impacted by the Category 1. Also going to visit with Tom Law, catch up with Tom, and Rich Yang. So there you go. There's your third hour. At the races. Also watching for scratches and get some changes out before I post some plays. All right. Also being told that there's potential for other charges to be added to the obstruction of breathing charges. So this is a, if ever there was a term developing story applied, this would be it. Back after this, Hour 3 at the Races here on SiriusXM.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing